WHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Texas Democratic legislators are in Illinois to prevent a vote on a Republican redistricting plan backed by President Trump. CBS's Ed O'Keefe.
The Republican Governor Greg Abbott is threatening to expel these legislators for not showing up for work if they don't today. The Republican Attorney General is threatening to arrest them. They could face big fines, but so far, these Democrats are defiant.
Fire crews in California are battling the Gifford wildfire near Santa Barbara. It's only 3% contained. CBS's Jason Allen.
Air tankers dropping fire retardant dealt with winds fanning the erratic flames. Nearly 50,000 acres are scorched across Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties.
After Friday's weaker-than-expected July jobs report and downward revisions for May and June, President Trump fired the chief statistician.
We'll be announcing a new statistician sometime over the next 3-4 days. We had no confidence. I mean, the numbers were ridiculous, what she announced.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Melissa Kay. Wisconsin wildfires may be smaller than the ones in Canada and the western U.S., but as Parker Olson reports, they pose a different challenge here than in seasons past.
This year, 971 fires have burned over 2,500 acres in Wisconsin.
In the last 2 years, we've definitely seen some earlier fire seasons, so longer duration fire seasons. And typically, it's been kind of that March, April is kind of our peak, but we're seeing earlier peaks to our fire season over the last couple of years. So definitely earlier snow-free conditions across the state, and we're having fires, you know, statewide.
In the 8 years from 2015 to 2023, there were a total of 33 fires in the months of January and February. This year and last year, there were 200 in those months. Weather is the primary factor on how many fires may occur in a year. Snow plays a key role in the changes to Wisconsin wildfires. Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot says years that are supposed to be colder and snowier aren't delivering the snow and temperatures that allow nature to defend against fires. On the other side of summer, according to prescribed burn specialist Michelle Witeka, droughts are putting Wisconsin at greater risk.
Climate change right now is most definitely impacting our summers. We are dealing with more long-term drought. That guarantee of, you know, no wildfires occurring during this time because it is literally the vegetation is too flushed with moisture, that is not something that we can hang our hat on anymore.
With both ends of fire season extending, it's easier to accidentally start a fire. 98% of Wisconsin fires are caused by people. That's why experts say to be cautious, avoid burning on dry, windy days, and make sure the embers are out when you're done. For Civic Media News, I'm Parker Olson.
And I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR WIRI News.
The Brewers take on the Braves. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight in Atlanta, where the Brewers face the Braves. Quinn Priester on the mound from Milwaukee against the Braves. Eric Fetty. The Brewers had to place Jacob Mizorowski on the 15-day IL over the weekend. The Miz still dealing with a severely bruised shin bone after getting hit with a ball during the Cubs game. The crew brought up Logan Henderson to start in their 14-3 win over the Nationals to complete a sweep. Outfielder Sal Frelick dealing with a knee injury Pat Murphy revealed over the weekend.
It's part of, he's had surgery on it back in 19, and yeah, the doctors will have to tell you what they think. I mean, we got Churio down for a while, now Sal. We don't exactly position player depth. We have some, but it's not as deep as we'd like. But yeah, let's keep rolling.
The Brewers remain in first place, 2 games ahead of the Cubs. NFL, the Packers have the day off. Tight end Tucker Kraft sat out family night with a groin injury. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We are going to have more of that wildfire smoke from Canada today. Otherwise, mostly sunny with a high temperature generally in the upper 70s to low 80s here through the day today. Tonight, partly cloudy, will drop to the upper 50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the low to mid 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 55.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You work so hard and have taught us so much. We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong.
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I lack a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us Monday for an important show. Measles is on the rise. Vaccinations are down. We talk to the folks at Wisconsin Watch and what that means for you. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
There are 34 million.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06 now on this Monday morning, August 4th. 2025, nice to have you along here. Parker Olson has the day off, but Greg Bach is joining us here. And so is Dr. Kristen Lyerly. And so is Up North News reporter Selena Heller. And so is meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Brittany, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. It was, you know, a weekend where the smoke, again, depends on where you are in the state, but it had dissipated just enough yesterday that you could do some of the things you want to do outdoors. It wasn't like as bad as Thursday, Friday was, but it is still, it's definitely still something that's lingering around here. It's going to be, I mean, kind of one of the weather stories of the summer, I suppose, here.
Yeah, it sure is.
Here, Robin Tigerton puts it this way. Mike, the farmer who leases my family farm, has told me that crops are doing well, busy baling hay, but the smoke blocking the sunshine has made it rough with the morning dew. We noticed that as well. You can't get out and mow the lawn as early as you normally would because, again, that sun is just not burning through as much as you'd like it to.
No, it's not. We've got patchy fog, too, all over the place. Mm-hmm. Definitely down towards Bosque Belle, Camp Douglas this morning. A lot of southwestern areas and northeastern spots of the state. Got this high-pressure system, right? It moved in from Canada. It's been sitting over us all weekend. And it is still going to stay here today. It's kind of slid over to Michigan a little bit, but another one builds in behind it. And long story short, it's going to be a dry day and another smoke-filled day. So, of course, we have that air quality alert that expires at noon, but it could get extended one more day. I think by tomorrow, we should for sure be in the clear from this wildfire smoke. The winds start to pick up out of the south, about 15 miles per hour. That should be enough to kick it on out of here. And then, of course, as we go to later in the week, that whole jet stream shifts and active weather moves back in. We've got the pattern just kind of shifting out of the south and bringing in more storms, more heat, and more humidity, too. So right now, it is still crisp. It is still comfortable. Temperatures are at about 48 degrees in Tomahawk, 72 degrees into Waukesha, and highs today will climb to the upper 70s to low 80s all across the state. It is still going to be comfortable dew points, but by Wednesday, it starts to turn muggy, and by Thursday, we're getting hot and humid. Now, rain holds off until tomorrow. We could see a few isolated showers possibly far north, and that's about it. As we go into later in the week, we'll see more storms.
Okay. From Tigerton, from Rob, good morning. Fair and hazy, 55 degrees. Today I have mowing jobs in Wittenberg. Whenever I hear Greg's voice, I can hear him saying, drink my water.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you could hear him saying it right now.
Drink your water, Rob.
There we
drink
go.
Drink your right. water.
Says I mowed Saturday in rural Tigerton, got stung by a bee, and swelled up around his elbow, had to ice it down. Let's see, he's got another note or two here from us. Oh, he had a cat at my house who had kittens in the garage where I keep my truck and lawnmowers. I now have an army of cats outside that stay in the barn. We talked about Mike, who leases his family farm. Mike told me to say hi to Kristen. He supports Kristen and her fight. So aw, there you go.
Thanks, Rob. Hi, Mike.
I know. You just got... Oh, and Rob also noted, I love Brittany's videos on social media from the EAA Air Venture. I was going to mention that too, Brittany. Did you do more than one? I saw one on social media over the weekend.
Yeah, I've been slowly putting them all together. So they're more and more coming out. But yeah, got a couple of them.
Okay. Well, great. So again, look for Brittany there on social media if you want to see what all she was talking about with the camping and the rain and the exhibitions.
The camping and the rain and the planes. Good Lord.
So much. Brittany, thanks. We'll talk to you next hour.
Sounds good.
Hey, a reminder that if you miss an episode of our show at any point, there's a great way to make sure that you can go back and listen. And that would be to pod this program. Head over to Spotify or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow the show that way. You can also do it over at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. All right, so Selena, the Combine Demolition Derby. I know we've talked about this at least once before, maybe a couple of times, because I don't know that they necessarily invented it at the Jackson County Fair, but they sure have perfected it.
You're on mute, Selena. Somehow.
There it is. Okay.
Take it. Okay. Yes. No, it's been around. And, you know, we got to thinking about it, and they've been doing it for quite a while, a lot of years. But it's in other county fairs. It's in a few other states, as I was kind of looking at it a couple of years ago, where they've done combine demolition derbies. But like a couple of years ago, they had 17 combines at the Jackson County Fair. So that was a pretty big deal. That's a lot of combines.
Yes, it is. And you talked to a couple of folks who tell us kind of more of the basics about it all.
Yeah. So Mark Emerson, he's 66. And all these farmers kind of, and Sam McNulty, they're buddies, and they kind of get together and do this every year. There's a lot of farmers and their kids now are in it, and nephews and things like that. So they're kind of all ag related. If they're not farmers, they have businesses that are ag related or something like that. So it's just a fun time for them. And it's at the Jackson County Fair, and there's a demolition derby, a regular derby with cars and trucks. And gosh, back in the day, my brothers did it. So I got to paint the cars. And then there's a powder puff. So with girls driving too. So my brothers always thought I should drive, but I never did.
Nice to know you have boundaries someplace. You're not going to drive the demolition derby.
Well, and it was the year, and my friends wanted me to. I was on the Miss Jackson County Court, and they're like, you have to drive in the demolition derby. You have to do it. I'm like, oh boy. I don't know.
Oh boy.
Oh boy.
Did not know you were on the court.
I was back in the day. Yes.
Okay. All right. What about you, Kristen? Were you in the running for Ms. Kakana or anything like that at some point?
I'm just trying to clear this picture of Selena driving a combine, or maybe Whiskers driving in a very Toonsis kind of way. Like
Toonsis, the combine driving cat. It always ends poorly.
Well, let's
put the helmet on.
While we play with those visuals, let's hear from Mark Emerson, who tells us more about the Combine Demolition Derby at the Jackson County Fair.
Well, we get a bunch of guys together. We take combines. We beef them up some. We got to take the windows out, the glass all out and stuff. And we got to just beef the heads up so the heads stay on. And we go out there and smash into everybody just to see how much damage we can do. The last one standing is the winner usually. But we'll have heats today, so they'll take the top two out of five or six or whatever we have in each class and run in the final then. And then there'll be six in the final, and the last one standing is the winner.
This is a big spectacle.
Yeah, yeah. And we make a lot of noise, a lot of crunching and stuff, banging and stuff. The one that Sam Kling, he's been tipped over twice now. He got tipped over in Marshfield and he got tipped over in Galesville 2 weeks ago. But he didn't get hurt or anything, so that's a good thing. And he's back here now again, so he's going again with the same one. So yeah, we've been taking some of these same ones for many years. I think I started 20 years ago with this. And then it sat for like five. We didn't have any demolition. And we started Blackover, and so we've been here for at least 15, 16 or more.
And these are pricey machines, but these aren't ones that are functioning.
They're wore out before we buy them. And like I say, a lot of them like his, he'll fix them up and then take the engine out after they're done and sell the engine and get their money back out of it and stuff. So you actually don't really have much in at all invested in them. So we either, we all get along really good.
Until we're out on the track.
Yeah, when we're on the track, we're competition. But when we're done or before, we'll help each other out. When we're done, we'll help each other out. Oh yeah, when we're out there, we're all for ourselves.
I'm assuming that was Sam that we heard in the background there. Yep. Is that Sam McNulty?
Yes, I talk to them every year. They're the best. I love them. I love talking with them. And Bill McNulty was actually the winner this year, Sam's brother. No. So, and Bill is 66 also. So it's fun.
So Sam gets, they get tipped over, but they don't get injured. You're getting tipped over in a combine.
Combine. All right.
This isn't like mythical cow tipping. This is actual combine tipping, and they're not getting hurt.
Yeah, they have to beef up the cages around them. They have to wear seatbelts. Safety is the priority. They move the gas tanks inside. So, you know.
Oh, man.
They're also made of different stuff than us, Pat. They're just made differently.
Yeah, they are. Let's give a listen to Sam McNulty talk about it.
It's just a rush. We're all farmers. It's one way to let off a lot of steam. Like Mark said, we're the best of friends. But when it's out there, it's... one, it's only for one. Yeah. But yeah, they're all wore out combines that we find laying at auctions or sitting in somebody's boneyard, and it's just fun. And I think, I mean, I shouldn't say this, but the crowd loves the combines a lot better than the cars.
Ooh, shots fired right there at the cars. I think the Demolition Derby still does well. Now, is it still the case? I know a year or two ago you told me that the ticket sales for the Combine Demolition Derby do so well, it practically subsidizes the rest of the Jackson County Fair.
It is typically the biggest day of the fair, so in terms of admission. I sell tickets to the grandstand events. That's my job at the fair. It has been since like high school. So I'm at the Demolition Derby. I have been at that event probably every year since high school. And that's my job. So the line is long. And yes, the fair does well on that day because it's such a popular event. People love, love, love it. After all of these years, it hasn't, you know, waned in entertainment value or interest. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Do they have anything remotely like that by either one of you guys, Greg or Kristen? I mean, it is a breed unto itself, basically.
I mean, I think that if I look, I mean, I'm sure we're seeing, because Racine County Fair, I think, is coming up soon, and Kenosha County Fair. I'm sure there's something, but a combine demolition derby, I don't think so.
No, this is, and we mentioned Milo Music earlier, Selena, and you said you've been to Milo Music. You were there for a work thing?
Yeah, can you imagine? I got to go there and stay there and watch music for work when I worked in economic development for the city. A team of us from Altoona, they were developing their new park here, and so they wanted ideas. I went there for ideas, and Visit Eau Claire, our kind of tourist organization, went there for ideas. So we got to go there and stay for work to learn, as an example, what Appleton did with Milo Music. So it was really cool.
Which, by the way, paid off because, I mean, Eau Claire is its music festivals are just blossoming around the whole area.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. We're kind of known for you know, our music events over here. And now all of the parks here have, and probably everywhere now in Wisconsin, is really picking up on this, a music in the park night. And that here, around here, you can go to a Sunday in Chippewa, a Monday in Altoona, and a Tuesday in Eau Claire, and then a Wednesday. And I mean, every night you can go to something around here. It's pretty cool.
There's something really cool about how the music is tied to the university there as well. So in Appleton, it's obviously Lawrence, and Eau Claire at UWEC and the great music program there. To see the music faculty and the students have a place where they can go and just like do their thing is so neat. Do their thing in the community.
I'm glad you mentioned the universities because over the weekend, Sherry and I finally had our belated anniversary dinner. We always go to Mona Lisa on Water Street in Eau Claire. And then we go tool around the campus where we met back in 1983. And Selena, I had not seen the progress on the new science building up there. The thing is massive.
Is it? I've been seeing pictures. Mm-hmm.
It's at the bottom of the University Hill there. They took down two dormitories from way back in the day to put up this new science building. And it's just looking so nice. But they're also tearing down Zorn Arena, where they did basketball and all the other, you know, shows and things. But they were only like halfway done. So exposed to the elements is like the bleachers and an Eau Claire logo above it. It's just really interesting just to see all the changes around campus. So
Everybody's nostalgic about losing Zorn.
Oh yeah, but it's a, you know, there's some nice modernization going on there, and these universities, like Kristen said, will bring you community festivals as well. This is up. No, this is not. This is Mornings with Pat Whitelow. Powered by.
Sorry, that's my fault.
News. It's such a Monday thing. We'll be back after this. You're up north.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You may have heard of the 4% rule when it comes to retirement. After you retire, you withdraw 4% of your retirement savings each year. The truth is, the 4% rule should be viewed as a guide, not as a strict rule. For example, the rule is based on retiring at age 65. If you retire earlier, you may want a lower withdrawal rate. Your lifestyle also matters. Are you planning to travel the world or spend more time at home? Consider inflation as well. A well-built strategy usually includes small annual increases in withdrawals. But you don't need to take a raise just because the calendar says so. So, stay flexible and revisit your plan of withdrawals regularly. That will give you the best shot at a secure, fulfilling retirement.
This content was provided by Edward Jones for use by Clay Kanoki, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisor at 715-421-0958.
That sound? It's your recycling at work. And you can thank a Wisconsin woman for making it happen. Millie Zantow saw a waste sorting system in Japan during a trip in the 1970s. She came home to Prairie du Sac in Sauk County inspired. Her research led to the triangle-numbered plastic recycling system we still use today. So can you guess what percent of all the plastics produced in the United States ends up being recycled? 75%, 25%, or 5%? The answer coming up. Zantow also helped with Wisconsin's recycling laws, along with the opening of one of the first collection centers. But now, are you surprised to learn the answer is just 5% of plastics are recycled? It's according to the group Beyond Plastic. Yet Zantow always believed you don't have to be perfect, you just have to start. There's a smart slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, and now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Rapids Report, proudly brought to you by Crockett Septic for this August 1st, 2025. I have your host, James, here. We're here to talk with some of our favorite people, the Historic Point Boss. We have Mike Hittner with us. Good to see you, Mike, as always.
Yes, good morning, James, and everybody in Radio Land.
We're talking today specifically about their wonderful event, Whodunit. And for that, of course, we bring in our good friend Luke Conkle, who, of course, the writer of these and everything. Luke, nice to have you in studio.
Yeah, good morning, James.
Good to have you here, man. We appreciate the time from you guys and all the effort, all the energy that is put into these events. We really do appreciate the way you keep history alive over there for us. Let's dive into this one, this particular Whodunit, going to be premiering Saturday, August 9th, 2 to 5, over at Wakely Road in Nacoosa. We'll give you more details as we go along here. But, Luke, where do I go with this story? what do I tee you up to so you can take it and everything? Because there's a lot of different angles on that.
That's what we all want to know, right?
Yeah. This year we have known as a locked room mystery where somebody turns up dead under some... Well, obviously, it's a mystery, so mysterious circumstances and figuring out whether... The sheriff seems convinced that it was a natural death, but not everybody is on board with that theory. Mm-hmm. So the trick isn't necessarily figuring out who done it, but what happened and how done it.
It's multifaceted. A lot of times it's just who done it, but this has got all different aspects, and especially since it was a locked room, and he was in there by himself.
Those kind of mysteries. They're the best. Some of my favorite home stories are the ones like that. Yeah. When it comes to the idea, is this something you've had for a while, one you've been chewing on for a while, or just something that came recently?
Yeah, every year I I sit down to write this and think, this might be the last one. I'm running out of stuff. But then usually as I'm working through it, I come up with a couple other things that I want to throw in there, but, you know, might make things a little bit too difficult or might add too many threads. And so this is one of the threads that I started pulling on a couple of years ago. Yeah. And it's coming back around.
Luke came out during the festival and he was looking for ideas, I think in June, and he brought his three little girls with him, and he was looking for ideas. Evidently, he got an idea because this is a 15th year for Luke from 2010 till now. So
it's really impressive. You know, as a side note, being able to as a loose writer and as a creative, I'm blown away by what you do, man. I think it's really, really cool, especially with the energy behind it, the passion behind it, the reasoning behind it, and everything. I think that's very cool to do. Mm-hmm. When it comes to being able to hammer this out and then, you know, get it out there, get it to everybody, how did that process go? Once you had that idea, getting it written?
Mike can speak to it a little better, but it's a couple of weeks later this year, and I warned him that just meant that it was a couple more weeks that I could procrastinate and get
sure,
to him.
But, sure.
From sort of the idea phase, it starts out, I have obviously kind of an outline of what the reveal is going to be, you know, who done it or what happened.
Yeah.
And then, working backwards from that outline to more of an outline of, each character, figuring out first which characters I need and, how they're going to connect maybe sort of loosely to past years, that sort of thing. And then outlining, each character, maybe motive, means, opportunity, that sort of thing. And then, from there, taking some of their, like Mary Wakely has, she's sort of evolved into the town gossip character. And so, where does, being the town gossip fit into this particular year's mystery, that sort of thing? So.
Is there any danger of this being a little similar to a Murder, She Wrote scenario where it seems like everywhere Angela Lansbury went, there was a murder? I don't know if anybody ever caught that, but it seems like it. So what's going on over at Wakely?
Well,
there are so many, like over these. I'm kidding. I'm just joking.
If you're a fan of a lot of these British detective shows, these really, really small communities out in the hinterland have one murder after another, and you wonder, where can all these murders come? This town is about 400 people. Who's coming through there?
I know
or whatever.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, Luke, how do you keep from, and I can't imagine, it actually probably happens with the story somewhat, but you don't want to repeat yourself. You don't want to go to the same well too many times. And as Mike touched on, you've been doing this for over a decade and everything. How do you keep yourself from doing that? How do you keep yourself fresh with this?
Yeah, I don't know.
it's probably organic.
I don't have a good answer. I try to not, like it's a locked room mystery. We had one other locked room mystery 4 or 5 years ago now. So I try to not do, the same kind of mystery. I'm trying to decide how to answer this question without giving too much away. There's really only a small handful of, motivations for murder, kind of cycling through them and,
That's a good way to do it.
Going back to it, yeah.
I know I'm a big fan of, detective shows and all of that, and I grew up loving Columbo like a lot of people, and I remember reading not too long ago, actually, a lot of the writers on that show would approach it as they would start from the end and then go back.
Yeah.
Is that a little bit of what you've done before?
Yeah,
or have you done?
That's essentially it, yeah.
Okay.
Figuring out.
That's interesting to me. Yeah. That's a cool way to write. Yeah. I've never written that way, and I find that awesome. That's really fun. Yeah. I want to try it immediately.
Yeah. For some people, especially my wife, she loved Columbo because she had it solved in the beginning, and then they went back through and showed what transpired to that point. And, some people, it's kind of a different genre to do it from backwards forward or something like that.
Yeah, and this is sort of a, people talked about Monk, being a sort of reincarnation of Columbo in some ways. And and one of the sort of fun things about that show is in a lot of cases, no pun intended, they would actually give you they would show the audience the actual crime at the beginning, right? And then you would have to sort of figure out not what happened, but how Monk figured it out, right?
Exactly.
And so that's I mean, none of our actors know which one of them did it, but I think this year more than other years, I think maybe if they read carefully, they can maybe figure it out. And so there's maybe a little bit of that flavor here where, you know, that they might actually know what happened and they're sort of trying to piece it together for the audience.
You kind of saw where I was going with this, with those shows. I think Law and Order is another one of my favorites, where they kind of give you the...
You were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you follow that familiar smell of grilled pork through the fairgrounds, it'll take you to the pork shop. I'm Kylie Allen for the Midwest Farm Report, and today she's the program and marketing director at the Wisconsin Pork Association. With the state fair still in full swing, that means Wisconsin Pork's pork shop is still busy feeding fairgoers. Recent renovations to the shop mean more pork chops can be served than ever before.
Yeah, so we were really trying to kind of upgrade and modernize a little bit, make things more efficient, make something that's easier to transport if we want to go to different events. And so that was a big asset. They were custom made. We had a great crew that did it and planned for them. And so we're learning each year. But like I said, in just its couple years here, we're really excited to be able to serve more pork out of it. And like I said, increase efficiency for everybody.
The pork shop expects to sell over 25,000 pieces of pork at this year's state fair. Morgan Warwick along with us. She's the program and marketing director for the Wisconsin Pork Association. Stick with us. I'll have a look at some more news after this.
Unique farming operations need unique financial solutions. Ag Country Farm Credit Services offers customized financing that fits any size farm, ranch, or agribusiness. The next time you're in the market for more land, equipment, facilities, or maybe even an operating loan, contact the team at Ag Country. They know agriculture and will work for you. Ag Country. Focused on ag, focused on you. Ag Country is an equal opportunity lender.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The DNR has mobilized fire control program staff across Western United States and Canada. This is in an effort to combat increased wildfire activity and assist in suppression and protection efforts. Personnel and fire suppression equipment are allocated to these fires through mutual aid agreements. The agreement is outlined by federal firefighting agencies and the Great Lakes Forest Fire Compact. The compact is comprised of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, Manitoba, and Ontario, Canada. Their main goal is to promote resource sharing throughout the Great Lakes region, including personnel, equipment, information, training, and technology. Nearly 70 large-scale wildfires are burning over 1 million acres in the U.S. The mobilized Wisconsin firefighters and engines are slated to be on assignment for 2 weeks or until the fire subsides. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Kylie Allen.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
We are going to have more of that wildfire smoke from Canada today, otherwise mostly sunny with a high temperature generally in the upper 70s to low 80s here through the day today. Tonight, partly cloudy, will drop to the upper 50s to low 60s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high in the low to mid 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 52.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Families and the Ad Council.
Sometimes as dads, I think we're too hard on ourselves. We get down on ourselves on not being able to, you know, we're the providers, but we also have to learn to take care of ourselves. Arapahoe Way, you got to pray for yourself. as well as for everybody else, but never forget yourself. Self-love made me a better dad because I realized my worth.
Never stop being a dad. That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman will join us to break down all the weekend news. We go beyond the cheese with Poppy Bakery. Join us.
Mattenair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
We are back on this Monday, August 4th, 7:35 the time, and off air, we're just busy yelling at Parker because it's his day off, and yet there he is throwing comments on YouTube. Parker, go back to bed. Mm-hmm. Greg says,
just don't.
Parker says, Greg, it can't count as work if I'm laying in bed. It's just like my senior year of high school.
Okay, first of all, thank you. Second of all, he's 22. He's supposed to be sleeping until like 11 o'clock in the morning and stuff like that. I'm the one who wakes up 40 minutes before my alarm. That's my job as an old man. Thank you very much.
Yes, it's what we do. Let's see. From Jim in Brookfield on the text line. Hi, Pat. Try microwaving your corn when you're caught short on the grill. Put the corn in a Pyrex container. Add a little water. Cover with Saran wrap and you are good to go. Much better than boiling in water. Appreciate the tip on that one. We definitely needed something. And then for the stuffed chicken breast, again, when the charcoal was running low, and I know all these people going, yeah, see, that's why you have gas. No, I like charcoal. That's how we're doing this. But sometimes mistakes are made. Air fryer. Yes. Air fryer. The chicken breasts were at like 125. I had to get them to 165. Starting them on the grill and then finishing in the air fryer, such a good thing. Kristen's got her hand raised. Kristen doesn't cook. Kristen, an air fryer is a countertop appliance. Anyway, what was your question?
We actually got into a little bit of a domestic dispute over air fryer. I was offered an air fryer for Christmas or a Lululemon sweatshirt, and I went with the Lululemon sweatshirt. But that was not my question.
And
my
there's
question
our winner for the most Kristen thing that's going to be said this morning. Yes, Greg.
Oh, you had a question, Dr. Lyerly.
My question was, when you grill corn on the cob, mm-hmm. do you soak it in the husk and grill it in the husk, or do you husk it and then grill it naked?
I do not grill it naked. No, just because, again, I've done the husking. I like the husking. I like the heart wants what the heart wants.
There it goes.
Greg, what was you going to say?
Two things. One, corn, try once, just once. Go with me here. No butter, no salt, lime juice. Change your life. Second.
Interesting.
What I'm about to say, I want to make sure I'm saying this with all due respect to you, Dr. Lyerly. This is not based on you as a woman or me. You seem like the type of individual who doesn't just like to cook. You love to cook, and you would make dishes that people would be like, I want to take pictures of this.
No, that is absolutely not who I am. Do you know who is like that, though? All of my children.
Good.
All of my sons.
Excellent.
Well, yeah,
cook,
they had to or they'd starve.
I know. It worked out really well.
Look,
for
Mom's
me.
Giving us SpaghettiOs again. You know?
Hey, I put hot dogs in there. I made it international.
I'm like a cut up an apple and eat some peanut butter kind of gal. That's... I like to keep it real simple.
I'm the same kind of lady. I do the same thing. I like peanut butters and apples. Yeah, it's just surprising to me. But that's good. And you said you taught your boys how to do laundry. I think that's very important. I think that's all the good things.
My job is not to coddle them mm-hmm. and to prevent them from learning. My job is to put them out there and teach them how to survive in the world. And I think I've done a pretty good job.
Yes, ma'am.
And they don't seem too affected.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah. Now, we mentioned it was National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. Do you make chocolate chip cookies?
I do bake. I like to bake.
All right. Mm-hmm. And anything special about your chocolate chip cookies?
I have to give props to my dear friend Ann Weiland of Oregon, Wisconsin, who taught me to put Crisco, half butter flavored Crisco, half butter. It makes your cookies rise, and they are delightful.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Cookies.
I got to go add to the shopping list. Mine is just a variation on the, remember Mrs. Fields cookies?
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Fields, what the cookie recipe there,
calls for, along with the flour, but also some finely chopped oatmeal. So it's not an oatmeal cookie, but some finely chopped oatmeal. And along with the chocolate chips, a little bit of finely chopped chocolate chips going into the batter.
So wait, there's oatmeal and chocolate chips on top of the chocolate chips?
Not on top, mixed in with the batter.
Interesting.
Just gives it a whole different texture and a little bit more of a chocolate taste. So there you go.
You know what I really love, though? The cookies I really love are monster cookies, because it reminds me of my grandmother, and I have her recipe, which is for like one gazillion monster cookies, because she was a farm wife, so she had to make a ton at a time. So, yes, so I love to make my grandmother's
monster cookies. What are monster cookies?
Oh, it's like peanut butter and oatmeal.
Say
and
more.
Chocolate chips and, yeah, they're
please and thank you.
Good. Yes, right. I'll make you some.
Yes!
Okay. Let's see. I want to get to something Kristen has been working on through the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. But before we get to that political news, let me get one state headline in from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Roughly 192,000 Wisconsin voter registrations are deactivated during routine maintenance. The story from Mia Thurow from the Journal Sentinel, who noted that this is part of a legally required four-year maintenance process, where these 192,369 individuals, they were sent mailings regarding their registration status. You know, some people responded. It was a pretty small number here. I want to say, here it is, 9,500 voters responded saying, yeah, I'm still here. But the other, you know, 190 plus thousand didn't and hadn't voted for 4 years. And so they were deactivated. Boys and girls, that's how it's supposed to work, is routine maintenance. And every so often you do the routine maintenance. What doesn't work is if you're politically motivated and you run to the courts and say, we demand you strike all these people from the voter rolls because we say so. Wisconsin Elections Commission's doing a great job. Let them do their job. We have the best run elections in the country. And let's say we try to keep it that. There's my public service announcement for today. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, ACOG, was in the news last week for taking a particular stance when it comes to national politics.
Yeah, they sure were. I'm really excited about this move. So ACOG is obviously an organization of OBGYN doctors, and our job is to take care of women. And in an environment where the President of the United States has issued executive orders that have really made it impossible for us to fulfill our mission, specifically to take care of women and to offer comprehensive obstetrical and gynecological care, ACOG took the unprecedented step of saying, we're not going to take federal funds to do the work that we've been doing together, which is research and public health infrastructure work and work on preventive care. ACOG said, no, we need to take care of our patients in an objective way that we know is science and evidence-based. So they said no, and I'm really proud of them for doing it.
So they can do that. And how are they, I mean, how are they backfilling, I guess, is one way to put it.
You know, they have a foundation. We have members who pay dues. So for the time being, that's where those funds will be coming from. It, day by day, we'll see what happens next year. In the past, it has been, we've received millions of dollars from the federal government. You know, throughout COVID, there were times where we partnered, and there have been extensive partnerships with the federal government. There have been a number of different initiatives that we've worked on together, and those initiatives are still there. It's just the funding piece that's gotten very tricky when you're working with the Trump administration.
Well, and I'm sure this is a little bit of apples and oranges, but when you look at what's happening with colleges and universities and their research funding, and this is research funding, there's nothing political about the research that can, you know, save lives, develop new products for the economy and all of that. But in the, you know, the MAGA war on education, and really that's all it is. Don't tell me it's about indoctrination or socialism or whatever. It's a war on higher education. And in doing so, they're putting an end to the funding that puts an end to all kinds of federal research. They are endangering the visas of foreign students. Congressman Tom Tiffany was in the headlines recently for, you know, seconding that thought of targeting all these people with student visas and running them out of the country, you know, on behalf of what? You know, some xenophobia. But these are colleges and universities that have foundations, and that can't replace all of the federal funding, But it is still a little puzzling to me that so many of these colleges and universities are acquiescing, shall we say, to what the Trump administration is demanding, and that groups like ACOG can say, no, we just don't need your money anymore.
It would have been a huge hit to who we are and the work that we do if we had continued to take that federal money. But, you know, I'll tell you, I just spoke with a friend of mine who is a specialist in St. Louis, and she is a researcher, and they have moved their lab to China because they can't get the federal funding here in the United States anymore. And in order for them to continue doing the important work that they do in preventing the spread of infectious disease, they've got to go somewhere else. So this is millions of dollars in research leaving the United States, now going to China, which doesn't feel good given, you know, the relationship that we have with China and the Chinese government. But, you know, they don't have alternatives. And we're seeing this happen all over the country.
Yeah. The Trump administration, of course, is trying to take this all as some kind of a victory. An HHS spokesperson says, this is great news for the American taxpayer. ACOG taking itself off the federal payroll might be the most responsible budgeting decision that they've made. Whatever, dude. There's a reason why governments, responsible governments, would invest in public health and research and things like that. And again, it's not like you're saving the taxpayer any money, spokesperson dude. Well, you're just giving that money to the wealthy through tax cuts. So stand down.
Yes. And let's remember that women's health in this country is not in a good place. I mean, we've got the highest maternal mortality rate. More women die as a result of their pregnancy in this country than in any other developed country. Not by a little, by a lot. So we've got a lot of work to do. But with the loss of this federal funding, with so much of the dismantling that the Trump administration has done in our healthcare system, we can anticipate that our outcomes will be worse. And it's going to take months to years to be able to see the effects.
As noted by Axios, ACOG is one of the few medical associations. I'm sorry, let me say that correctly. ACOG is one of a few medical associations vocally pushing back against Trump and Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s health policy. Healthcare during pregnancy has become a flashpoint. Kennedy has removed the recommendation that pregnant people get COVID-19 vaccines, and a recent advisory panel to the FDA cast doubt on the safety of antidepressants during pregnancy. ACOG said the composition of that panel was, quote, alarmingly unbalanced, and there's robust evidence showing the medications are safe during pregnancy. The group boycotted a June meeting of Kennedy's handpicked vaccine advisory committee, saying that a purge in June of the panel's 17 advisors compromised its credibility.
Yes.
Yes.
That is just true.
Yes to all of it, to doing the right thing.
Yeah, you know? I mean, the American College of Pediatricians is actually suing the Trump administration over their vaccine recommendations because it's hurting kids. And the pediatricians are the least political. They don't even have a political action committee, but they know that it is making it harder for them to take care of their patients. We know that when ACIP does not recommend vaccines, that insurance companies won't pay for vaccines. And that means that these life-saving, literally life-saving vaccines for children will not be covered by insurance. So we are having to take drastic measures. These are really, really uncomfortable times.
Yeah. And look, it's easy to classify this as heroic, but it really is just standing up for what's right, yes, which we need more of at this critical time more than ever. Dr. Lyerly, so great to talk to you again. See you on Friday, we hope.
Sounds good. See
All
you
right.
then.
Have a great start to the week. Coming up, a local update is next for some of you. For others, we're going to talk to Jimmy Cuska a bit. And then in our next hour, John and Gordy from our civic media station in Madison. And then Sean Fetteplace from Main Street Alliance on giving small businesses a voice, the way they're being hurt by Trumponomics. That's all ahead. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Crockett Septic provides professional septic system pumping, inspections, and portable sanitation rentals. Trust the experts and keep your system running smoothly. Call Crockett Septic today, 715-712-3456, or visit CrockettSeptic.com.
This is the story of the one. As a lineman, he does whatever it takes to keep the power on in his community. And he wants a partner like Grainger who does the same. Grainger offers the professional-grade products he needs from dependable delivery, so he can rise to every challenge. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, I'm Ashley, a certified radio digital executive. With decades of experience working with small businesses and owning my own, does digital marketing make you feel overwhelmed? Sometimes there are so many choices and packages to choose from. You could just sign up for everything and the kitchen sink, but there's a better way. Call me at 715-496-0710 and I can build the perfect package for your business.
This fall, there's only one place to be, Camp Randall Stadium. Wisconsin football returns with can't-miss matchups, including Maryland, Iowa, Washington, and more. From the first touchdown to jump around and the celebration of the fifth quarter. Experience the traditions and unforgettable memories that make Wisconsin football so special. Single-game tickets are now on sale. Lock in your spot today by visiting uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. Wisconsin football game day starts here. We'll see you at Camp Randall.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I pushed through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, and now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
You kind of saw where I was going with this, with those shows. I think Law & Order is another one of my favorites, where they kind of give you the crime, and then you kind of have to figure out yourself. And you're playing along at home, in a way, with this. It's almost like a game show in some ways of trying to figure out who the criminal is and all that. And then we, of course, have our whodunit, which is extremely similar to this. And to those that may not know much about this event, Mike, can we tell them how this breaks down, how this goes?
Well, it starts at 2 o'clock. People usually come, some early people come at 1:30. I would suggest for those that would like to do this and are about it, probably don't come any later than probably 3:30, because it takes you time to go from one character to another, and they're spread out somewhat, not more than a couple hundred yards, but they're spread out. And what one character says, you may want to go back and verify what ties them into this other character, or maybe some of the other character told something that conflicts with what the other person told you. So you got to have time to go back and forth. And sometimes, people do it 4 or 5 times that really get into this, that love this sort of murder mystery sort of thing. Yeah. And so, opens at 2 and Luke does the reveal at 5 or shortly after 5. And so, plan plenty of time, I think. I would say at least a minimum of an hour and a half that you got time to go around. You don't necessarily have to be there at 1:30. Some people are there at 1:30. They enjoy that. They sit down. They probably picnic or something. I don't know. I'm in the house. I don't know all the time what's happening on the outside. But I'm thinking some people just enjoy the day, I think, too, and the camaraderie that maybe friends and family have with it.
Being outdoors, being in on those grounds alone is a great time, and it just feels good, especially this time of year. Getting to play, I've been fortunate to do a lot of roles in my life, and I'm hopefully fortunate to do more, but playing Sherlock Holmes will always be way up at the top for me. You get to play Sherlock. You get to be this. You get to be Columbo. You get to be all of those characters, all your favorite detectives and everything. Go out there and ask these different actors, these different people playing these characters, these questions, and kind of find out for yourself who done it. I appreciate you bringing up one point that I remember in years past, I had somebody bring up, can I go back and ask people questions after I talk to them? And there's not really I would say that there's probably rules to this, but more rules that are just kind of common sense, you know, more so. Not to say that so bluntly, but nobody's going to tell you who did anything because they don't know. I think that's a really cool part of this, Luke. Yeah. So even if they wanted to, they can't say anything because they don't know. That's awesome.
Yeah, we can give it away, that, and that's good that we don't know, because you could make inferences. You know, it's easy, the way you look or something, and you could give it away, and you don't even know you gave it away.
Right, right.
So I think that it's important for people to go around, and I think that people really get into it after a while, and they go around. And then when other people are there, listen to what questions and answers they get, because sometimes, they're getting different answers than maybe you got, and so you can kind of catch somebody in maybe not a lie, but maybe an untruth.
There have been a couple of times where folks have benefited almost more from, some people are kind of shy. They don't want to ask questions right up front. And so they've benefited from listening into like two or three groups asking their own questions and realizing that maybe some stories are a little inconsistent, even with the same character.
Sherlock had Watson to balance off of and everything. So the idea of doing it with a group or something, or working with people, I love that. That's a fun way of doing this. And when it comes to the story, it's a fun one, an exciting one, and it has local ties to it, which also can give out history lessons in itself as well.
Well, we got a new thing, Luke, written into it this year, Carver's Claim, which was refuted by the U.S. Congress in 1823, where a guy went through when it was British area and had mapped it out, and somehow he had signed some treaties with Sioux Indian chiefs.
Allegedly,
that he had 10,000 acres they gave him, and all this, flim-flam people were trying to sell on this, probably up as far as the Civil War or later, was trying to sell some of this land on that basis yet.
Yeah. That's a really interesting part of this.
Yeah. I always try to have some little, historical connection.
He likes factoids. And
yeah. Hey, I'm with you. And all of us being lovers of history, really, in like an event like this is such a fun way of getting it across. There are teachers out there that are like, lesson plan.
And this is probably one of our earlier ones. This takes place in the early 1840s, where a lot of them were up closer to the Civil War and this sort of thing. So this is back, right after Carver's thing was turned down by Congress. And a lot of people probably didn't know the facts of it or even knew about the Congress turning it down. So they were still going on the flim-flam guys trying out there to sell the real estate.
Yeah. Yeah, and if we have some regular folks that come back every year, you kind of have to suspend disbelief a little bit with our timeline. People are here that maybe, were here, a couple of years in the future, but,
We probably have to study who's president in 1841 or something.
Yeah. That's art. That's art. That's part of the responsibility of the people being entertained is to be able to take a little suspension of belief and all that. All the shows we mentioned, all the books, all done that. They've all done that. So it's something that I think, especially if you're coming to this event, one of the major reasons I would think is to be a part of this, be a part of the whodunit, and you're going to be able to do that. And we encourage you to not only do that, but check out the grounds, look around a little bit, especially if you haven't been there in a while or if you've never been down there. It's a perfect opportunity to come check things out, Mike.
It's a good opportunity. The barn will be open, the three-bay shed, the bunkhouse, the house. So you can go around and see some of those buildings if you haven't been there or maybe you haven't been there for a while. So, and we separate all the characters. Like the Hollises, Maggie and Jeremiah will be in the barn, but one will be at the small door and one will be at the big door. And the same with the Turners, one will be in the three-bay shed on the north side, one will be on the south side. So we separate all the characters so they can't collude with each other, you might say, and they have to kind of tell their story as they see it.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. One thing to watch out for, though, you talk about the site and that sort of thing, is that, every once in a while we'll have somebody that'll they'll see an artifact, some site dressing, and mm-hmm. and assume that it's been planted as part of the mystery. But we don't need to rely on physical evidence in this case.
Right. And there's no props that pertain to his death there.
Right,
so
right.
So they're looking around for strange bottles or something. Maybe it was a poisoning or whatever it was, and they're always looking for something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have definitely done that. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Yeah. Yeah. We look forward to
you this. Were listening to the Rapids Report, sponsored by Crockett Septic. To hear the full interview, visit WFHR.com, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Texas Democratic lawmakers are in suburban Chicago to prevent a vote on a Republican redistricting proposal that they say favors the GOP. Democratic Texas State Rep Chris Turner.
There was a time when a Texas governor wouldn't be afraid to tell the president, any president, don't mess with Texas. But Greg Abbott is too subservient and too weak to do that to Donald Trump.
California's Gifford Fire has exploded to around 50,000 acres in Los Padres National Forest near Santa Maria. Captain Scott Safechuck says that hundreds of homes are under threat.
A portion of them have been evacuated. They're under a mandatory evacuation. And then the others are under an evacuation warning.
The search enters a fourth day for a military veteran who police say shot to death four people in a Montana bar. Shane Charles knows the suspect and says he has a history of mental issues.
He would tell us stories that he's John Wick one day, or he was the president's right-hand man,